Okay. Somebody we didn't specifically advertise, but we'd like him to talk because he's just come back from the occupied West Bank. He's just come back from Palestine, where well, I won't say much about his experience because he'll talk about it, but where he was assaulted by the Israeli Defence Force. There's been a couple of articles in the Evening Chronicle about this in the last couple of weeks, so people may have seen that. Mick Bowman is active in the Newcastle Palestine Solidarity Campaign. As I say, he's been over there recently, and we really wanted him to have a chance to talk about that in this meeting. So although it's off the main topic, I'm just going to give Mick 4 or 5 minutes to say a little bit about that and to say a little bit about what happened to him and to make some of the links between these different issues. So Mick. Yeah,
good idea.
Right, thanks very much, Alex, for this opportunity just to talk a bit about events in the past couple of weeks, but not to put it in the wider sort of context about sort of Palestine as a whole. I mean, the protest on the 13th of February, which I was arrested together with a Palestinian activist and comrade, a guy called Mohammed Khatib, who was in his 40s, and so has lived all of his life under the Israeli occupation of the West Bank, which started in 1967. So the protest was held at a Palestinian village called Berlin, which is about half an hour's drive from Ramallah. It's a lovely, lovely village, very beautiful village. It's in the sort of western, sort of central part of the West Bank. And I know a few people here have been there and have been also taking part in the regular sort of protests, which I sort of took in as well. So it's really good that a few people here know exactly what can picture what is it about. I mean, the village, as it's sort of Berlin, organised by the elected popular committee. Maybe just sort of say that nearly every town, every village, every city in the West Bank has an elected popular committee who coordinate the resistance activities, the struggle against the occupation, in every sort of part of the West Bank. So in Berlin, the elected village popular committee, of which Mohammed was a very active sort of member, have been holding peaceful protests at Berlin, out the village for the past sort of 10 years, going back to beginning of 2005. What they're protesting about is the building of the apartheid wall around the West Bank, a wall which Israel refers to as the separation sort of barrier. For the people of sort of Berlin, the building of the wall has resulted in the seizure of thousands of acres of valuable agricultural sort of land. Well, now that land is completely inaccessible to the village. It's all behind the wall on the 48 Palestine, Israeli sort of side of the wall, and it's actually sort of been built up by huge sort of settlements. So it's a huge, huge sort of loss that the village has sort of suffered against it. And I just think, just to say why their protest is so important and why the protest against the wall as a whole, the apartheid wall, is so important, I need to just give a little bit of context and just a little bit of background about the wall, what the wall actually represents. I mean, it's people who've been in Berlin, they'll know that the wall there is it's a massive, huge, solid concrete structure. It's about sort of 6 metres high, so it's higher than the wall sort of here. It snakes around the whole sort of countryside as far as the eye can sort of see. It's interspersed every so often with military watchtowers. In front of it there's a buffer zone, which is marked by razor wire and sort of sensors. So it's a massive sort of structure. You kind of get away with it. You kind of get away from it. So as I say, it's... But that little bit of the wall, it's sort of Berlin, it's just a tiny fraction of the wall which is being built around the West Bank. When it's completed, it's going to be over 720 kilometres long. I mean, at the moment, it's about 72 or 74% complete. And the remaining sort of 25 to 26% is sort of planned and sort of construction's already sort of started. So it's a massive, massive sort of structure. Now, in July 2004, the World Court, which full name is the International Court of Justice, ruled that the wall was illegal. It said, you know, breached all forms of international sort of law. Ordered Israel to dismantle it and to compensate the Palestinians who had their land, so their livelihoods so disrupted by it. But since then, Israel has completely ignored this sort of ruling and in fact has continued to sort of build it with complete impunity without any sort of comeback from the international community. Now the wall is really essential to understand that the wall is actually the backbone of the Zionist semi-colonial sort of project. And it's resulted in the indigenous sort of Palestinian sort of population being boxed in separate sort of bamboo stands within the sort of West Bank. Each one is increasingly isolated with each other, surrounded by a huge sort of settlement expansion sort of program, There's now, and these are the latest figures from the UN, from the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs last year, there's 520,000 settlers in the West Bank, and 150, what Israel sort of uses, legal settlements, and another 100 sort of outposts. So the Palestinian population is increasingly sort of isolated. For the sort of people of Berlin, the struggle against the war is a struggle for survival. And in the protests on Friday, which I held every sort of Friday for 10 years, the people of Berlin have experienced the full might of the Israeli occupying sort of forces in terms of using excessive force and violence and collective punishment measures. It's resulted in a number of deaths over the years and countless injuries resulting from sort of like the different sort of munitions which they use. They use sort of rubber bullets, rubber coated steel bullets, tear gas, pepper spray, water cannons which spray this noxious toxic substance called skunk water, and also increasingly they're using live ammunition as well. And one of the developments over recently is they're using this caliber of bullets, 0.22, which what it does, when it enters the body, it doesn't exit the other side, but it sort of fragments within the sort of body, especially if it hits sort of bone, it'll fragment sort of bone as well. I mean, when I was there, I was in protest 2 weeks previously in a village called Nabi Sali, and the guy there was hit in the leg with one of these sort of bullets. Now the protest I was at on December 13th was part of the regular protest, but it was also given an extra sort of dimension and poignancy because it came a few, I don't know if you remember, it came a few days after the shootings in America, I think in North Carolina, of three young Muslims. And also it came a few days later after the announcement of the death of a young American woman, Kayla Muller, who was murdered by ISIS in sort of Syria. She had a connection to the village of Berlin. She was there with the ISM about 4 years previously. So what the villagers did on this particular sort of protest, they developed sort of placards and photos with Kayla's photo on it and the photo of those three Muslim people who was supported in America. And the point they were getting sort of across was basically that they were opposed to terrorism everywhere, whether it's terrorism perpetrated by the Israeli state, by groups such as ISIS, or the acts of terror resulting from rising Islamophobia. On that sort of day, I mean, the people who did these demonstrations will know that the army usually fires tear gas and occasionally sort of rubber bullets and stuff like that. And that day they were particularly sort of violent, not quite sure, were really aggressive from the start. Firing, I lost count of the tear gas rounds, up to 50, 60 rounds. We reckon on the day they probably fired about 250, 300 rounds of tear gas. They were using stun grenades, they were using rubber bullets. The confrontation with the sort of soldier, well, it wasn't a confrontation, the soldiers were extremely sort of aggressive. Manhandling sort of protesters. I was at the front taking photographs of what was sort of happening to document, which is part of the role with ISM. The army started throwing down, they arrested Mohammed Khatib, and they started throwing in stun grenades. So that, at that point, I thought we'd score that, because we thought we were going to use live ammunition next. So I turned around. Mohammed had already been arrested, violently sort of arrested in pepper spray. I turned around and sort of run away, and the next thing I knew, there was about three or four soldiers jumping us from the back. Quite violently sort of detained me. Punching and standing on my hands, trying to break, once he was going to break my nose. And then after they got the cuffs on, then they pepper sprayed me in the eyes, which had done with Mohammed as well. So we were detained, we were held by the army for about 3 hours, and then we were ostensibly taken up, handed over to the civilian police, who were there for another 7-8 hours. I was charged with assaulting a soldier, and the assault people, then they charged the victim with having perpetrated the assault. So I was charged with assaulting a soldier. I've subsequently found out that the Israeli authorities are now claiming I was also throwing stones, which is a fabrication. Okay, this year, I was held until about the 10 o'clock for a night when the prison in Jerusalem, which is an interesting experience, I don't have time to go into now, went before a court and was given an order not to return to the West Bank during the 10 hours there in a fine which were lose. But I just want to emphasise two things before I finish. One is that what happened to me is really a very inconvenience compared to what happens to sort of Palestinians, what Palestinians have had to put up with in the past 48 years of the occupation. Palestinians who dare to sort of protest, their fate is much worse than a national such as myself. The worst that could have happened to me, I could have spent a few days in detention and being deported. But Palestinians, if there's a very real sort of threat of being assaulted, then they're badly beaten and picked up by the army before they're moved to prison. Within prison, all four prisoners, one of the military prisons where the group which GFOS is complicit with, is a routine use of sort of torture and maltreatment there. Palestinians are dealt with under a different system of law. They're dealt with under the military system of law, by which they can be held for up to 8 days before being brought before a court. And then the court has the power to in effect, sort of initiate the process of administered detention, which could either people, Palestinians being held indefinitely without sort of trial and process. So finally, I'm finishing now. It's just like to sort of say that. But I should want to sort of stress, well, this other point that I want to sort of stress is that the fight for justice for the Palestinian people is very much a part of both the fight against the rising tide of Islamophobia in Europe and the rest of the world. And it's also very much part of the struggle against the foreign policies which are based on neocolonialism and military adventurism. And I'm absolutely sort of clear that there won't be an end to the Israeli state's colonisation of the Palestinian territories or its apartheid policies towards the Palestinian people without the wider struggles against Islamophobia and Western neocolonialism also being addressed. So it's all part of the same sort of struggle. Right. Thanks very much.
Thank you, man. Thank you, Mick. And I'm involved in Newcastle PSC as well, and I know we're all absolutely thrilled that Mick is back safely after all of that. And it does remind us all of the reasons why we recommit to solidarity for Palestine and raising that here in Newcastle.